You know that we do find ourselves today in probably the greatest financial crisis probably the world may have ever seen. We don't know yet exactly how it's going to develop, but it's certainly something along those lines. At the same time, there's a nuclear threat over in North Korea and the ballistic missiles that they've test fired, and they're gathering armies on the border there. There's a nuclear threat from Iran. There's the fact that Pakistan is in chaos and there's a nuclear threat there. And we're in this time of absolute turmoil in the world. And I don't know how many of you have the same kind of experience that we have over here in the UK. But there was all this going on, and I think it was this last week, and the most important thing on the news was the fact that Burnley is going up to the Premiership. And for three quarters of an hour, we had nothing but a Burnley that was going up to the Premiership. That's the football. That's the soccer, as you call it over in America. But you know, there's a great deal more as well, because when we're looking at the paper, even today, we've got this is the Daily Telegraph from today. I'm sorry I can't show you on the internet, but it's all, the front page is all about phantom mortgage MPs must face fraud charges. And then for nine pages inside, the first nine pages as you go through this paper, you find everything about this problem that they have in the Parliament at the moment. Regarding the expenses claims of the various parliamentarians. In addition, another two-page spread as well is inside, and these are not. This is not tabloid. This is foolscap. You know, not foolscap. What do you call it? Broadsheet paper. Nine pages in the front, a double-page spread inside, plus numerous comments in articles and editorials as well. And. It is something that you think, well, what on earth is going on? Why are we concentrating on this to such a degree? And I thought what I'd do today, because I don't have a great deal of time for the news analysis, I'll just try and zoom in on this one point. In fact, why it is that this seems to be taking a life of its own over here. And I think you will find that some of these things will also be the case elsewhere in the world as well, that certain trivia will start taking precedence. I'm not saying that this is entirely trivial, because it's not, because once you start looking behind it a little bit more, you start seeing the real problem that's there, and it's biblically mentioned, the problem. And we'll go and actually look at the real problem within the news analysis. But I want to just read you some of this from Philip Johnson, who's a columnist over in the Telegraph. This is from last Saturday's paper, which has got the title, again, it's a full-page spread saying, "Give us our lives back." And he mentions here, he says, "We have the worst of all worlds. Not only are we over-governed, we're badly governed as well. We're snooped on more than the average North Korean, harried by marauding armies of parking enforcers and wheel clampers, pestered by health fascists and safety obsessives, and shaken by speed humps. If we smoke, we're told where to puff. If we drink, we're made to feel guilty. If we drive a big car, we're pariahs. If we hunt, we are turned into criminals. If we make a, quote, inappropriate, unquote, remark, we can expect a visit from the police. And if we stand up to hooligans, we can end up in court." And he goes on, he says, "How has all this come about? And a clue can be found in the expenses crisis that has engulfed Westminster." And this crisis, if I can just explain to those of you who are not from the UK, those of you abroad that are actually logging in, this crisis has engulfed the country. It is on virtually every paper, and it is the fact that they charge so many things to their expenses claims, like mortgages, mortgage repayments, interest repayments for mortgages that they've already paid off. That's the one that's fraud charges. And there's kind of duck houses on moats and cleaning out moats and all kinds of stuff that they've been charging. But he says, "How a clue can be found in the expenses crisis that has engulfed Westminster. MPs have simply not been doing their jobs properly. They are there to hold the government." Now, the government is a part, it's not all of the people in Parliament. The government is just the controlling power in Parliament. "It's to hold the government to account, but they've allowed a torrent of legislation to pour forth. They've spent too much of their time thinking up ever more imaginative ways to claim their generous allowances, and they've given up their primary task. This government has brought in more legislation than any of its predecessors. Since 1997, more than 3,000, that's 1997 now, which isn't that long ago, just over 10 years, 12 years, more than 3,000 new criminal offences have been created by Labour, 1,000 of them actually punishable by imprisonment." So this is the rate you get this draft. I mean, there's already far too many laws anyway. if you compare what God, you know, God is love. Love your neighbour and love God with heart, soul, and mind, and neighbour as yourself. That's the basis of God's law. And then you go into the Ten Commandments and the statutes and judgments that amplify it. But within the UK system, it is just simply a continual pouring forth of law making. He says, here are just a few of the things that you could do before 1997, but you can't now. And he lists several. Let me just read you some of them. One of them. Own a horse, donkey or Shetland pony without possessing a passport carrying a picture of the animal. That has come in since this particular time. Secondly, ride off with a pack of hounds in pursuit of a fox. That is now illegal. Another one. Play the piano in a pub without an entertainment licence. You're not allowed to play the piano in a pub without an entertainment licence. So if you see me in prison sometime, you might know what's happened. Okay, another one. Own a pistol for any purpose, including sports. You're not allowed to own a pistol over here in the UK. So another one. Stage a protest of any sort, even if alone, within 1 kilometre of the Palace of Westminster. Unless you go and you get go to the authority of the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, specifically signs to allow you to do so. Another one, fish in the Lower Esk without authorisation. They've actually passed a law against it. Another one, import into England potatoes that a person knows or to be or has reasonable cause to suspect to be Polish. So, there's another one. But just to give you an idea, another one, keep a car on your own driveway without tax, even if it's not being used, unless you've filled in a form. And that is again come in. And all of us that have cars know this. That if you have a car that you're not actually using, you don't have to use it on the river. If you're just sitting in your farm or somewhere like that, you've got to have got to apply every year to renew what's called a SORN, a statutory road off-road vehicle report or something like this. Another one, sell a grey squirrel. You're not allowed to sell a grey squirrel. You can kill it, but you can't sell it once you've killed it. And he goes on. He says, what is it that drives the legislative mania of modern governments? It says, have they no sense of history, no philosophical framework within which they can understand the point at which government activity must end and the private citizen begins? And I think that's very appropriate. And really, when we look at it, this is the problem. There is no moral foundation to the legislation. It is just legislation that happens to come to the surface. I think actually, I'm not sure whether I've got it here, but they spent 700 hours, maybe I've got it written somewhere else, but 700 hours was spent of the parliamentary time. Now, you work it out what 700 hours is. It's about 3 months worth of parliamentary time was spent on stopping people hunting a fox. 700 hours spent of the MP's time. They've lost all concept of the impact of excessive lawmaking on the freedom of the individual. The expenses crisis has merely brought all this to the surface. Resentment against a government that raised taxes after promising not to, then wasted billions of pounds on failed IT systems and top-heavy administration. Incredulity over ministerial claims that crime had fallen when we can see with our own eyes that it hasn't. Frustration at the inane regulations, the unjustified use of fines and charges, the bloody-minded parking restrictions, unreasonable European directives, multiculturalist busybodies, and the vast overpaid and largely useless quangocracy disconnected to the rest of us. It has all gone on for too long, and the people to blame are those who fail to put a stop to it, our MPs. That's why we're so angry about duck islands, bath plugs, and second-hand flipperies. That's the problem. And this is why it's taken on a life of its own. It's taken on a life of its own because of what's happened in the past. And I thought that the comment was good that was coming from there. But if you just turn with me briefly across to Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Ecclesiastes chapter 10. It says here, in Ecclesiastes 10, it says, woe to you, in verse 16, O land, when your king is a child and your princes eat in the morning. And you think, well, hang on a minute, I have breakfast every morning. Why is it that princes eat in the morning? Well, if you want to put in your notes, I haven't got time to turn there, but Jeremiah 21:12, you'll find that the morning time, that's Jeremiah 21:12, the morning time is for judgment. And in ancient customs, ancient, you know, these Middle Eastern countries, The morning would be when the Justice Department sits and does its work, does whatever it needs to do. So, woe unto you, O land, when a king is a child, and your princes eat in the morning instead of getting on with the job. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles, and your princes eat in due season for strength, and not for drunkenness. And this is, again, this is coming out of God's word, it's coming out of the what God has to say about the situation, and certainly as we can we can go through various articles in the paper, and in this same paper, this is from last week's last Sabbath's paper, there was another article as well that was written by Lord Young. Now, Lord Young, if I can give you a little bit of his background, it says, this is from Wikipedia, it says, Young is the eldest son of a businessman who imported flour and later set up as a manufacturer of coats for children. So he's from a manufacturing family background. Then he took a law degree and he became a solicitor and he practiced for a year. Then he joined Great Universal Stores as an executive, working for part of that time as an assistant to the chairman. So he actually used the time that he was with that to learn the business. Then he left that to set up his first business. And he then, during the 60s, he built up a group of companies in industrial property, construction and plant hire. So right through the 60s. Now he's now in his 80s. He's well into his 80s, is Lord Young. And he has written a comment, again, commenting about this problem that we find within the country and saying, well, what is the problem with it? What is the heart and core of the problem? And what he says is that MPs, this is the headline, it says, MPs used to be better, wiser, then he dashed, then he says, and older. And there's your problem. These are not, and he says here, woe unto you if your king is a child and your princes eat in the morning. They're more concerned about what they can get out of the system instead of actually giving into the system, and they're also young. They haven't got the experience to really realize what's going on. And here we find ourselves in a world which has got nuclear weapons that are proliferating, even if you can't get your tongue around it. And you've got a financial crisis such as which we've never seen, and yet the country seems to be oblivious. And even when you go into the analysis of what's happening in Parliament, there seems to be a problem. Let me just read some of this particular report as well. It says, I was in my fifth cabinet meeting, it was in my fifth cabinet meeting that, sitting back and idly glancing around the table, a thought struck me. Now that fifth cabinet meeting, I worked out, he used to be a minister or an advisor to Mrs. Margaret Thatcher. So that was probably in 79, 80, something like that. So he was in his 50s, he had a business career behind him, he'd started several businesses, he was a prominent individual that was brought into the cabinet to advise them and to help them. He says, of the 21 of us in attendance, 11 had one time started their own business. In today's House, it's hard to find members with much outside experience at all. It just aren't there. Again, what does it say? Woe unto your land when your king is a child. You see, you can't have the experience if you just got a child. You know, now it's not talking about, now Josiah was a child when he came in as king. But if you read the story of Josiah and find out who his mother was and find out who was the daughter of the high priest, so he was being helped and controlled and guided by the actual priesthood at that time. But here it says, there's not much outside experience at all, let alone that of working for themselves. When Gordon Brown introduced members' outside earnings into his review of expenses, he was continuing the process of discouraging MPs from having other interests. Politics is increasingly described as a full-time occupation, even a profession. Today, the traditional route to the House has become school, university, political society, think tank, and then member. And this achieves an almost total insulation from the life of their constituents. They cannot see what other people have got to go through. They're completely removed, if you like, from that. Their hours of the Commons have changed so that instead of starting after lunch and sitting into the night, and you say, well, why did they start after lunch and sit into the night? Because they had a job to do in the morning. Woe unto you, O land, where your king is a child, your princes eat in the morning. Well, they weren't eating, they were out there working. They sit in the day, finishing most days at 7 p.m. Politics has gone from a vocation to just another occupation. How did this come about and why? More than 100 years ago, Parliament was a part-time affair, sitting from February to mid-August, just during the summer months, that's all it was. The vast majority of members had outside interests. There were no women, and they were unpaid. Nobody got paid at all. In other words, people had to go ahead and work, they go ahead outside, they had business interests and so on, and when they came to the point in life where they were retiring, basically, then they had public service to give back to the community. And that's where the government came from in days gone by. It was the elders that were there. But as it says here, it says, woe unto you when your king is a child, when the actual governing body is a child. That seemingly amateurish arrangement sufficed for running the largest empire the world has ever known. And it is. I got my statistics wrong in the update yesterday, but apparently it was 1 in 4 people on earth came under the British protection, and 1 in 5 acres on the land that actually came under British protection, and virtually all the oceans, because the oceans were British controlled, right the way across with the sea gates and so on. And that was run by what's almost like an amateurish structure. But the way in which it was run fits in with Scripture, because Scripture does describe that you've got to have a certain level of understanding and background in order to govern. If we turn over to Isaiah chapter 1, it's interesting when you look at Isaiah, it's not chapter 1, chapter 2, if you look in Isaiah chapter 2, it's specifically called, talking about in verse 2, it had come to pass in the last days, the mountain of the Eternal's household established atop of the mountains, and we established above the hills, and all nations will flow to it. And many people shall say, come and let us go into the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we'll walk in his paths. For out of Zion, the church, shall go forth the law, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. And these are going to be people who have lived a life, who know what it's like to have lived a life, and overcome. And this is why we're in this world now. And then they will be put into positions of authority within the future as spirit-born sons of God to administer the government of God. That's the difference. That's going to be the big... Yes, it's not just the only difference. That's one of the many differences that you're looking at. It says here, Lord Young said, after the First World War, the widening of suffrage allowed the entry of women and labour replaced the liberals. And at the time of the post-war Labour government of 45, Parliament was still part-time. Senior skills, silks, that's the legal profession, who were MPs, would finish in the courts at 4 p.m. and then go down to the House. Many others were leading lights in the city or industry and in management and the unions. And the Commons commanded vast experience, much of it disinterested. In other words, not interested in the things that the Commons was dealing with, but all the peripheral things as well that would then give the kind of depth and the wisdom that was necessary to govern. And that's all gone. So here we are, we're in one of the greatest crises we've got, and the leadership has changed. It's changed dramatically. It says, when I entered the Lords in 1984, there was also a tremendous array of talents. And what happened? The Lords got changed. All the hereditary peers were removed. It says, of course, the Lords was political, but I remember that our chief whip complaining to me about one of our captains of industry. Now, the whips, therefore, say to the party members how they need to vote. That's basically what's happening. And that is what's happening today. They say what the party needs as far as voting is concerned. But this is the way it used to work in the past. He says, of course, the Lords was political, but I remember our chief whip complaining to me about one of the captains of industry who had taken the Conservative whip, being dragged into the chamber against his will for a three-line whip. And when the vote came, he voted with the other side. And when he was challenged, he said, look, I came and I listened to the argument and they were right. So he was voting correctly according to not just conscience, but what he saw with his own eyes was right. Not according to the party politics. This spirit went with the Blair reforms of the Lords, replacing most hereditaries with members who carried pages in order to be able to follow the party line. Probably as a result, we've had cases of questionable behaviour by peers and even investigation into the members' expenses. There have been a number of causes for the deterioration of both houses. first at least in the Commons, is the cult of the young. Aspiring candidates in their 40s have all too often been quietly told that they are too old. Why? Because you don't look good on television. But that's the reason. That is really the reason. You don't have this charisma. Yet this is just an age when experience blended with enthusiasm produces a more balanced judgment. And it's judgment that's gone. This is why it says in chapter 3, it says, I'll give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. That's what it is prophesied. It says, this is in the context of where it says, the mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, this is verse 2, coming into verse 3 now, the captain of 50, an honourable man, and all these people have gone, and he's going to give them children. And you know what it says over in Ecclesiastes regarding children. And what is happening from Jerusalem? It says, Judah, in verse 1, the stay and the staff and the whole stay of bread, the very word that is necessary to govern. And it is looking in the future, it's in a context of in the future, that this will then come back. Not just come back, but come back in a truly spiritual way. The Labour landslide of 1997 introduced far too many members into the House with little or no experience of life outside politics. And the next election might do the same with the Conservatives. Time spent outside politics is important if it's spent in business, unions, voluntary bodies or academia. The House must have members who can relate to what they're asked to do to their experience. If more MPs had worked outside politics, alarm bells would have rung over the expenses schemes. They would have seen that. They would have, why? Because in business, you've got to be very careful on how you put your expenses in. Why? Because you've got a tax man coming around. That's why, if you're in business. Selection committees should look to the candidate's experience, but there's a more subtle reason. Parliament has been inundated with European legislation which it had to nod through. The government has treated the House with barely disguised contempt, introducing unnecessary and ineffectual legislation. We wasted 700 hours, this is where the quote came from, we wasted 700 hours on the law restricting hunting with dogs. The government was dismissive of the reports of the Lords Select Committee on which I served, and this meant that Parliament had less and less of anything important to do, and in time, members degenerated into becoming superior social workers, making the job increasingly unattractive to any people of talent. Now, I just thought that was a very good comment. And the fact is that, as you say, you look here in Isaiah, and we see this problem, you know, children are their oppressors, women rule over them, and those that lead you cause you to err in verse 12 of chapter 3. But I want you to notice that the context of this particular passage here is in this beginning of chapter 2. And the fact is that eventually people will say, come and let us go up to the mountain, that's the government of the Eternal, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, we'll walk in the paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law. And the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. Now we have a job to do, and we've got to really just hang in there, and as far as the patient faith that it talks about over in Revelation 13:10, that he who leads into captivity will go into captivity, and what we're seeing within society today, and the captivity that has been brought onto society, we can realize that God has got his plan in place to actually alleviate all the problems and put everything right within this world in a way that nobody within the papers today has any idea.